Mr. Hay, Reel 12. We were talking about the assault on Mondano, and you got into the outskirts, the front of the village, and you were just describing the situation and your next moves.
Well, at that time we had to count the cost. I had lost one platoon officer at that stage. I didn't know I'd lost the other one until I got the chaps into some sort of defensive positions. We were near enough to the Germans for them to be shouting at us to give up, surrender. And we got ourselves into defensive positions.
What do you mean by that? How would you establish defensive positions in a...
We were going behind these brick walls and in the ruins. Just to protect ourselves from this machine gun fire. There's certainly more than one machine gun, but they had us in their sights, and they were shouting at us.
Was there much small arms, infantry small arms as well as that, as well as a machine gun?
No, I don't think there were any rifle fire. They were just seemed to be happy with these heavy machine guns. They were just spraying us.
And what was the morale amongst the men like?
Well, it was very low that time. You know, we had chaps who'd been wounded who couldn't be attended to, stretcher bearers were doing what they could. And we were...
How far had you advanced, roughly, across this open land?
From when I was with the colonel at this little cemetery, a mile and a half. And these were the first main buildings of our objective. Well, obviously, we passed one or two smaller ones.
And you'd been under fire for most of this mile and a half?
Yes.
From the machine?
Repeated fire. So we had to then sort out the position. The sergeant major was extremely good. He was rallying and taking command of the spare ones. And we went. I said to him, I must go round to the right where I sent Hoot's platoon to see how they're doing. And by that time, I found Hoot had been killed. And I'm quite sure a lot of the casualties were caused by this bomb. We were on the objective. This was the main attack. We weren't there alone. Generals, all sorts of people must have seen what we were doing. You know, you think you're alone, but all sorts of people are there watching the battle as it proceeds. And this astonished me that we were allowed to go on without support. All right, these aircraft came, but nobody warned us. And here we were, almost on the target. And so we had casualties from there.
You had no artillery support?
No.
And again, no tank support?
No tanks, not even our own tractors. Not our own mortars. Nothing. And so I said, well, we'll just wait. They're obviously waiting till night time to reinforce us. So I said, well, I went round the men, and eventually I know the count of fit men was 27.
Out of the whole company?
Yes. Well, 90. All right, we had people who were wounded, nothing could be done about them, but I think we had 27 fit men. Figure sticks with me. And as we come to expect, if you've got on the place, these people, I thought, they're bound to counterattack. They know they're not many of us, they're going to counterattack. So I said to the sergeant, I said, there's only one thing to do. Let's go for these machine guns. It's dark now. We know where they are. And I led this little composite company, let's say 27. There was a man, my runner was Wood, who had lost the wireless set, and I was going for this machine gun, and I had a grenade in my hand, when suddenly I saw the tree set fire coming from a position not the one I was going for, and I was hit on the temple. And my first thoughts were, have I pulled the pin out of the grenade? I said to all of them, if you get hit with a machine gun, I think you're concussed, but I was still thinking. And I said to my man, I said, are you all right? He said, yes. I said, well, I've been hit. I don't think I can carry on. And I was trying to get my first field dressing out, which you carry day in, day out, wherever you are. And I couldn't get the plastic wrapping off it, and obviously I couldn't see very well. I didn't know how bad my wound was. But I was still thinking, and I saw the two Germans get up from the machine gun, and was only about 20, 30 yards away.
You got that close?
Yes. But I hadn't been going, I didn't know about that. I was going for another. So, and of course, they always carry, I said there were more than one, they always cover each other. So, my thinking wasn't at its best at that stage. So, I said to this Morg, I said, are the others near? He said, I can't see anybody. I said, well, get up and run, I'll follow you. So, he got up and ran, and and I ran, and I don't know much about it after that. I remember meeting up with a sergeant major somewhere down, and I said, when many questions, he said, nothing further. So I think the two of us, myself and I, must have been well forward of the others. At that time, I really wasn't thinking very clearly. And I remember talking to the sergeant major. I said, well, make the men safe. I said, no reinforcements help, he said to me. I said, well, make the men safe. The next thing I knew, I was in some dressing station. And I was demanding, they said, I was demanding to see the CEO. And the CEO, somebody said he came to see me. I don't remember. And then again, I was in an ambulance and went to the hospital. They guessed my wound. And,
how bad was it?
The bullet had hit me here.
That's above the left elbow, left eyebrow.
Just above the left eyebrow, you can see a mark there.
Yes.
And I said, all right, good, a lot of blood. But it wasn't until later. I went to the hospital, I felt a bit spurious because other people were with me. But I do remember being in a tent on my own, on a stretcher. An odd person, I remember, coming to see me. And when I came to, I looked at my tag, and it said, gunshot wound, battle, exhaustion. And I saw by the time somebody said, oh, that's something. I said, battle, exhaustion. And I said, well, you've slept for 24 hours. So that's what I thought. I'd just come in. And they looked after me very nicely, and I thought, other people look much better. Very small hospital, and when I looked out, there's a little beach, it was on the coast, and I said, well, I better get back, because I don't seem to have much more. But I did have this dreadful feeling in my head, and I had to go down. I was falling over. It so happened later, the bullet casing was still inside. And that's what was giving me the idea. That's just to excuse myself. Anyhow, after a few days, I was taken to the home of one Benjamin Gini, the opera singer, who had a very posh house just on the coast, near there. And when I got there, there were several of us, I think 10 of us took 10 rooms, and they were just keeping an eye on us. which was very nice. I remember his manservant was there. There were two Red Cross ladies, but there was no nursing. But I think they were just keeping an eye on us because head wounds and buckledge are a different thing. After a while, after about 7 days, there was a chap in the tanks said to me, he said, you know, we're not cases here. Yeah, that's why they're keeping us here. I said, well, I thought some of them were very, very kind. So I said, I've got a truck coming to take me back. Would you like to come? I said, yes, yes. I said, I'm a bit uneasy just living the life of luxury here. So I went back with him in this truck. I left the little party that closed, the very kind, and a nice note to them. And I went back and I got into the line and he was in tanks. And I said, where's the 16th LI? So by crook and by crook, I found the 16th LI. I found the CO. And he said, oh, I hear you've had a rough time. I said, yes, I want to talk to you. He said, well, you know. So he said, I'll see you later. So I hung around and later that day, I said, I want to see 1 year old. And when I got into him, and I told him about what had happened, about the company had almost been wasted, and he said, well, it's no good telling me now, Alan, I understand, I'm sorry, but he said, the general has lost confidence in me, and it's time to go. I came out to all the chaps. I'm saying all this, but this is a true fact, because he wasn't a good CEO. He was a brave chap. He got the MC somewhere earlier for getting the rations up, but he handled the battalion so very badly. Despite our training, we never saw the tanks yet, and we never saw any support in arms. We didn't get any support at all.
And you blamed him?
I blamed him.
What should you? He should have made more certain that the support was there.
He should have kept us in the battle plan. They don't send one battalion off on its own. You have your support, and he has a gunner officer with him. And in the case of tanks, he has a tank liaison officer with him. You don't just go off. And you know, it all started where it was with a heavy battle. You know, we all knew what we were doing. And we weren't battle exhausted. We hadn't been in battle for quite a long time. We were fresh troops. And I do blame him entirely. So.
Was anything achieved, do you think, by the attack that your company put in?
No.
Did they have to fall back then? I mean, after you'd gone, did they fall back or did they manage to hold the positions at Mondino?
Well, it took them another 3 days to get Mondino. With full support, and the carrier to reckon they took it, but they got into just what we achieved in this Mondino. There was a triangle of roads, and it was obviously on the German plans. This was heavily defended, and it was in the valley, and this is the road through into the next phase. So you had high ground, as the hatches were there. We were to get this high ground, but we only started it. And this was just the easy road through to, but it was just criminal.
Had the rest of your company managed to stay in the outskirts of the village, or did they fall back before this support came through?
No, they stayed in the outskirts of the village. But I say, by the time I counted the ones I could only attack with, there were 27 of us, and I took the sergeant major, and I went ahead and I had my runner because I knew the object of the machine gun that was giving us the
It was the second one that got you, though. Did you actually get the second one, you and your runner, or did you just... No. You came back.
I was so surprised that the fire had come from that end. We were working undercover to get this one, but suddenly, out of nowhere, and here it's only about 20, 30 yards.
So you ran back from there?
Well, no, I got a soul, yes.
But you don't remember that?
I said to the runner, I said, you get out. upside down and hit. I can't get my field dressing on, and I think he came back. I said, come on, and by this time I saw these two Germans coming across. I said, get out.
They were coming across to you?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, they we were ahead of everybody else, I'm afraid. Well, I say ahead of everybody else. The others were soldiers using cover, but we were sorting out this one machine gun that had been, but it was Germans, there was coverage. Anyhow, that's just a bit of serious talk. So, after hospital, and I'd seen the colonel, I didn't join my company straight away. We were then going into San Marino, and I took up with my company again.
Back to A Company.
And we were then, San Marino was a protected state, but the Germans were still more than that. So then we went out of San Marino to the next attack over the River Rapido, which was the Vinwine River. So we were attacking across the Rapido, which was very, very wide, but not very full of water, so it was easy. And we established ourselves on the other side of the Rapido. And the Rapido was a very wide, dried up river, not too much water to wade through. But we were open targets. We got across the Rapido, and I established contact with D Company on my left, and we advanced up a hill against fierce fighting, and I was hit again in the hand.
What do you remember of the fighting? Can you set the scene a bit, or what exactly were you doing?
Well, across the Rapido, not knowing precisely what the opposition was, because we'd been in San Marino, which was supposed to be an open city, and so we were really starting the battle again. And of course, it was all uphill work, and we had difficulty in contacting each other. D Company and ourselves were leading across the Rapido, which was flat and not too bad, but we encountered opposition on the other side. D Company went off to the left to deal with some trouble. We advanced straight ahead and overcame certain opposition. And as it was getting light and the fighting was getting heavy, we started to find ourselves defensive positions. During this time, I was hit again in the hand, the right hand, which was difficult because I couldn't fire a Tommy gun. And we laid up during the day. We made contact with D Company and said what we were doing. I'd been wounded, and that would hold on that day. My hand got worse and worse. It was rolling up, but I was still in command of the company, and I was waiting for the OC to come. My OC then was Major Denny, Colonel Warrell having been discharged for his work on the previous engagement when I was wounded. So we just held on to our positions, and a Major Denny, who was second in command, had taken over command of the company, and after 3 days I was had a useless hand, and he said I was to go back, and I went to hospital, where I was for about 3 months.
How bad was your hand?
Well, it was... I stopped the shrapnel. It just came through here, all the knuckle joints. And they were going to take the fingers off. But I thought, oh, I don't want to go back to jail. So anyhow, there was a man called Cooper in Hartford who played for Oxford at rugby. And got on very well with him. He said, well, you're going to take the fingers off. He said, yeah, you'll find the no good. I said, well, I'd rather have two no good fingers and a scar. So he was very, very good. And there you are, my hand's still there. So he said, I'll be out of the action for quite a while.
What was life like in the hospital then?
Well, I felt a bit of a cheat because I didn't. It was just my hand. And there was a surgeon called Cooper who had been a player for Oxford Rugby. He was an Oxford Blue and a gut bender. And he was attending to my hand, which was shattered. And I told him, I said, you know, I still have trouble with my head. I don't feel right at all. And she said, well, what's the matter with it? I said, well, at times I'm really unsteady and I don't feel right. So I said, I'm not trying to say I'm not fit for my job. But I said, it's a bit uncomfortable. I said, well, what did your x-ray show when you were wounded? I said, I wasn't x-rayed. I left before the clinic. So he said, well, let's have a look. And when they x-rayed, the bullet casing was still in my head from where it had hit. So from being something that I didn't know why I was feeling so dreadful, because there was a very small mark to show the bullet casing had gone inside. So he said, right, well, we'll get that out. So we became very friendly, and he got it out very neatly and just cut along the top. So I was there for quite a while, and really it was just an afterlife because my hand was healing. And ultimately, I went back to battalion in November. So I had quite a bit of time, but I went back to battalion.
How had the battalion changed at all when you got back to it?
Well, there'd been in some heavy fighting. I didn't have much chance because I joined them in the north of Italy, and I made my own way up from hospital, which because they tend to find you other jobs if you go to a centre, and for my right hand was useless. I wasn't going to say that. I wanted to get back to the battalion because they were offered me various jobs here and there, and I wanted to get back to the battalion. I hadn't done a great deal of soldiering. And I got back to the battalion in a couple of days, making my way up the west, the eastern side of Italy. And they were just coming out of the line at Forli. And so I had 2 days rest, and then the CO, who had returned to the battalion, Colonel Worrell, must have been my surprise, because he had been sacked, and he came back to the battalion, and he said, oh, I've got a job for you. We're to come out of the line, and the battalion's to go to Rome. He said, I want you to arrange for the battalion to get to Rome, which would mean staging a couple of nights And so he gave me a truck and trucks, and I went off from the battalion, so I hadn't really time to see anybody, I didn't have a company. And we got to Rome, where I reported. I didn't know Rome, so I thought the best rendezvous would be a thing called the birthday cake, or the wedding cake, this huge monument. So five cook's trucks settled there, and I went to the person I had to report to for orders. And I brought the orders. I we went for me when the CO came, that we were to go to the airfield. We thought we were going home. But when we got the airfield, we were going to Greece. And so I still not in command of a company when we got to Greece, but I did get the battalion all there, the heavier weapons and transport were going to come by sea. And we landed in the airport of Athens.
Was that the first flight? It's early days for
yes,
troop
transport. That was the first flight of troops they had for reinforcing them, because the Civil War hadn't really started then. I remember it was a Sunday. Unfortunately, I wasn't at the briefing because, having been responsible for getting all the troops there, I had other things to do. So the briefing was that some brigadier gave our CO the situation that they were expecting a rising in the city. And we were to reinforce. Another battalion, the Leicesters of the same brigade, was to come. The other battalion, the Foresters, were sent to Salamanca, which was moved to Athens.
Now, what was your first move then? You landed at the airport. And where did you go first? That's December 1944.
The officers were addressed by a brigadier who said the situation that day, the Sunday, had deteriorated, and the ELAS troops who were going to take over Greece by force, not once the Germans left, were getting themselves set to take it. It was the political situation. Meanwhile, we had sent a force in because Winston Churchill was determined that Greece would not go communist. And he had assembled this force based on, I think it was 23 brigade plus a lot of civilians, or people doing civilian duties, and to take the Greece.
Now, your first move was when you first landed, not for long, was to the Acropolis.
If you can picture Athens with its Acropolis, and it's very imposing to land a few troops in there. And say there's a problem with the civil population or the rebels. That's something that couldn't be done easily. We were sent to the Acropolis because it was overlooking the town. We thought that would be a good position to conduct affairs from. Soon it became apparent that these rebels, the ELAS, were intent on taking over Greece as a communist state. The troops that had been sent in by Churchill, which only composed of one brigade, British brigade, plus lots of people to do clerical and administrative jobs, for instance, the Air Force sent in 300 clerks. The Navy was offshore, not being able to do anything in the city, but it was apparent from the meetings being held, and there was a huge meeting being held in Athens the day we touched down, when they said, apparently, that they were going to take over Greece by force if necessary, and they didn't want any foreign troops in. So, with only our battalion to immediately reinforce this, we were obviously all in the wrong places, and ultimately, when sporadic fighting broke out in places, we had to retreat to the seafront so that we at least could coordinate our own